today, and that is 091215, United States v. Stibian Mayo.
May it please the Court, my name is Robert Hennick.
Morning, Mr. Hennick.
Robert Hennick. I represent Terry Stibian on this appeal. I understand that Mr. Mayo's case has actually been set for decision on the briefs. The issue before this Court is not so much whether the District Court erred in concluding or in refusing to grant Ms. Stibby a reduction for her mitigated role in the offense. The government concedes that. Rather, the question is whether this Court can and should do anything about it. The government says, no, this Court should do nothing about it on the grounds that, according to them, it's harmless. The prime basis for that is the belief by the government that the District Court committed a counterbalancing error that they believe benefited Ms. Stibby in terms of the reduction from the statutory minimum sentence. According to the government, the court apparently considered factors other than merely Ms. Stibby's substantial assistance in reaching.
You know, given the 20-year statutory minimum, why would a mitigating role reduction have mattered? The statute still would have set the sentencing floor well above the reduced guideline range, wouldn't it?
Well, yes. The guideline range that was determined by the court at the time of sentencing was a level 35, which gives a sentencing range of from 262 months down to, I think it's 210 months. Under 5G1.1, that cuts the bottom off to 240 months. But we still have a range here. The range is 240 months at the bottom, 262 months at the top, nearly a two-year difference. The reason why it matters is because where the district court starts its examination of the reduction based on Ms. Stibby's substantial assistance could be as much as 22 months higher than the statutory minimum. We don't know from this record because the court didn't explain where it started its reduction from. But given the failure to grant at least a two-level reduction for role in the offense, we're left with this 240 to 262 range instead of just 240.
Well, you know, the guideline commentary notes that a mitigating role reduction is ordinarily not warranted when you have a defendant who has received a lower offense level owing to the fact that she was convicted of an offense significantly less serious than that which is warranted by her overall criminal conduct. And it certainly would seem as if that is true here, although Ms. Stibby pled guilty with respect to the one heroin transaction, she had done the same thing 100 times over, and she was occasionally compensated by some of the dealers. So you look at the big picture.
When you look at the big picture, she was convicted of distributing heroin resulting in death. If she had been convicted of a conspiracy to distribute heroin not resulting in death, her guidelines range would have been something much less than that. So the section that the court is referring to, where a defendant is convicted of a much less serious crime than the relevant conduct would actually reflect, I don't think applies here because she was actually convicted on a much greater crime than I think a more, you know, not common sense, but a more pedestrian view of her conduct probably would have justified. She drove 4 heroin addicts to get heroin, and she didn't know who it was they were buying it from. She didn't arrange the purchase. She didn't she didn't have the background to know where to go or what to do.
But I want to get back to your initial point, which was, had this reduction been applied, the district court would have been advised by some other guideline range. Because I think that's wrong. Given the statutory minimum, whatever the initial computation of guideline range was, whether it's 168 to 210, whether it's 210 to 262, the statute requires the district court to go back to 240. And that's where the district court went, and then when the government makes its motion, the district court goes down to 96. It's just very hard for me to see how that process in the end would have been different, even though one step along the way might have been different. But there's nothing in Booker or anything else that says the district court is supposed to look at some interim calculation for the guidelines. You're supposed to come up with the final calculation, and the mandatory minimum trumps it here.
Well, the mandatory minimum trumps anything below that in the sentencing guideline range.
And above, I mean, for the 168 to 210, if the mandatory minimum is 240, the district court's got to go up to 240, and that becomes both the maximum and the minimum.
Exactly. But what we're talking about is the difference between a sentencing range that consists of 240 maximum and 240 minimum as a starting point.
No, I don't know. We're not talking about range. She can only be helped by 240. Yeah. The district court thinks of this as a 240 mandatory minimum and goes down to 96.
The sentencing court in this case calculated the sentencing guideline range that went up to 262.
262, I know that.
But that's just standard practice of the district court to always make the calculation. But the mandatory minimum, you don't have any case law to support your position. The mandatory minimum rules.
So
all these other things really don't matter. I mean, the district court can take that into account in the reduction, in the 60% reduction. But that's just a battle you're not going to win.
So what you're saying, if I understand you, is that the district court, as things were, started with 262 in a sense and went down to 96. And you think the district court should have started at 240.
Yes, exactly. And the Supreme Court has recognized in the Glover case that a sentence difference of as much as 2 years is not harmless.
But the 262 is only in the range. The properly calculated range was 240 to 262 because of the minimum. The range had everything that you wanted to happen would have been 240 to 240. It would have been exactly 240.
Exactly.
And you need some evidence that once you're dealing in the world of discretion, once the government makes its motion and the district court selects 96 months, that 96 months was somehow influenced by the notion that 262 was the top as opposed to 240. That's where I think things become very speculative here.
Well, what we have is the starting point. The judge did not identify the starting point for the reduction for the significant or substantial assistance. What we have is
did you do the math on the 262 and do the 60% reduction on that? I mean, have you done the math? Is the 96 months 40% of the 240?
It is 40% of the 240. It is less than 40% of the 262. However, when we take into account this court's guidance in Thomas that when you're assessing a substantial assistance reduction, you can give, I think that they recommend, the court recommends there, although it doesn't require, two levels for each of the factors under 5K1.1.
So basically, what do you think her sentence should have been?
I think that her sentence should have been, let's see, if we take that Thomas calculation, starting with 240, it should have been at least no more than 86 months, which would have been 10 months less. That's what Mr. Mark Mosley got, who also was convicted of conspiracy resulting, or who was convicted of conspiracy to distribute heroin resulting in death, and who also had a number of other factors that would have been, he would have been more culpable than my client. It could have actually been less than that if we analyze it under Thomas. It could have, the prosecutor's analysis in the sealed part of the transcript concerning her sufficient assistance, at least four of the five factors under 5K1.1 were covered. That's an eight-level reduction. One of the others concerning whether or not she was injured or in danger, the fact that her son, in fact, was attacked in prison, I think would suggest a possibility of at least one other point. That's nine levels. That could take it down to, I believe it was about 5 or 6 years.
Do you think that the judge was influenced by the fact that another user overdosed on heroin in her car the week before Mr. Kobisky died?
He did not. The judge did not specifically refer to that. However, it was in the pre-sentence report, and it possibly was taken into account.
Finish your thought.
The other thing that the judge would have taken into account is when sentencing all of the other defendants, who were all but I think two involved in the same conspiracy, resulting in deaths. Actually, four resulted from that conspiracy. The range of sentences was from probation or 24 months in prison, all the way up to 30 years. And that actually people who were involved, more involved than Ms. Stibbe, received much lower sentences than she did.
Had those people done 100 runs to purchase the heroin? I mean, I know there are different roles, right, and you can't equate everybody. Was there anybody like her in the mix?
There was no one specifically like her who went 100 times to get her own personal use heroin.
And
no.
Take other people with
her? No. There were LaShonda Hunt, for instance, was the leader's girlfriend. She made a number of trips to Chicago and was responsible for, I believe it was more than a kilogram of heroin, but I don't recall exactly. She ended up getting 24 months.
All right, but Stibbe had people with her these 100 times, didn't she?
Yes, other people who were trying to just get it for their own use.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Koenig.
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Jonathan Koenig. I appear on behalf of the United States of America.
Okay, so Mr. Koenig, I've just done the math. according to Mr. Hennick's theory, the 96-month sentence is 36.6% of the 262. And if you took that percentage off of 240, you would wind up, as he suggested, actually I got 87.8 months. So it would have been a lower sentence if 240 had been considered the top of the range instead of the 262.
Your Honor, I guess the only response I have to that is to note that there's nothing in the record to indicate that Judge Clifford was moving down from the top of that range.
Is there anything to say he wasn't?
I'm sorry?
I mean, we have this endless series of cases now that say that the district court judge is supposed to begin the process with a properly calculated guideline range. So I'm wondering whether there's any clue that he was unaware that 262 was the top of the range. We've all been focusing on the bottom of the range, which we understand, of course, is the statutory minimum. But the top influences the judge's sentencing thinking as well.
As far as I know he correctly understood the range. But again, in terms of explaining his analysis, I don't believe there's anything that would support the proposition that he was beginning from 262 and working
down.
But
isn't it a little troubling to realize that there is this nine-month difference from her point of view? If he was beginning at the top and went down to 96 as opposed to beginning at the bottom and went down to 96, it's different for her. There is a way to see, and Mr. Bennett has argued, that this made a difference.
I suppose there is, but I guess what I'd like to point out, this is an unusual case, because essentially what the district judge did is he treated this as a safety valve case, where the bottom just completely drops out, and the 3553A factors come into play.
So why wouldn't there be some reason at least to do a Palladino-ish sort of thing and say, did you really mean 96 months out of the air is the right sentence for her, as opposed to something that was driven more mathematically?
Your Honor, the government doesn't have a strong objection to that procedure, but I would make a few observations. First of all, in seeking a Palladino remand, it kind of seems like the appellant wants to appeal without any downside risk. Obviously, a full remand would entail some risk for her.
Oh, sure. I mean, there are.
Yeah.
The record does show these other 100 runs or mm-hmm. what have you. I don't think she's quite as
sure
innocent as she portrays herself to be.
But the larger point is, I don't think there's any reason to suppose that the judge would come out differently than he did. And I say that in part because, although he did not give a role reduction formally when doing the guidelines construct, he did mention her role when he was talking about the 3553A factors, and that's at page 36 of the sentencing transcript. He mentioned her role in the broader conspiracy, her role relative to that of her son. So in a very real sense, the error was harmless because she ended up getting consideration for role. Now, we don't know.
Isn't that a problem with this crazy hybrid system that we have? You know, that, yes, there are many things that are taken into account in the guidelines. That's what the guidelines advocates pointed out at the time that Booker was decided. And yet, given the role of the 3553A factors, sometimes there are two places in the process where the district court might be thinking of a certain aspect of the person's background or the case as a whole.
Sure. And under 3553A, unlike the guidelines, we don't know how much of the reduction
right.
is attributable to any one of the factors that the judge talked about.
Right. You may be exactly right. It may be that Judge Cliver thought about this and said 96 months for you, but I guess there is some residual uncertainty.
Right. The Palladino remand was created to respond to a situation where judges may have been unaware that they had the discretion to under Booker. Here, the judge thought he had way more discretion than he actually did.
Yeah.
So, in terms of the equities of this particular case, the government does not have a strong objection to a limited remand mm-hmm. procedure, but I do note several, institutional concerns about doing it. And if the panel doesn't have any further questions, I would ask you to affirm the judgment in the case. Thank you.
Come on back. You had no time, but
yes.
Come on back anyway.
Okay. I'll do my best.
I had a question for you in light of what Mr. Koenig has just said. There's no doubt at all in my mind that Judge Clavert understands the sentencing guideline procedure perfectly well. And so if there was a mistake here, there was a mistake, and perhaps you should face a full remand, which would allow the government to fill out the record. The rationale for doing it in a limited sense doesn't seem to me to be there.
Well, the rationale for it is when we look at Palladino, it said there are two possible errors. One is if the defendant was sentenced to a longer period of time because the judge misunderstood the guidelines, then that's a manifest injustice. However, we can't just assume that the judge made a mistake.
Well, that's right. And so every one of these, the question we always ask was, now that you know how much discretion you really have post-Booker, is this the sentence you would have given? And sometimes the district judges said, yep, that's exactly the sentence I would have given. And sometimes the district judges said, no, now that I realize I've got more room to move, I would like to resentence. But the premise was a lack of knowledge about the system's operation, and I don't see any indication whatever that Judge Clavert was laboring under any systemic misunderstanding. He might have misapplied the minor participant adjustment, that's all.
Answer that, and then
I believe that the fact that the judge actually went through what appears to be a 3553A analysis when based on an erroneous view of what the guidelines range should have actually been suggests that there's more of a fundamental problem here than just the experienced judge knows generally what the requirements are, and so we should assume that he actually sub salento applied those here. The reason why a Palladino remand is appropriate here is because, number one, it's not clear from the record what the court actually was thinking at the time, whether he was in fact following the requirements of this court's interpretation of 3553E or just didn't explain it very well, or whether he thought that since he explained it in the sealed portion of the transcript that he already had done it. We just don't know. But on the other hand, the government has not appealed. The government did not appeal the sentence. So, and Ms. Stibbe is not responsible for the defects in the record. So by saying that she can't go back and get it fixed without running the risk of having a longer sentence, when it's not her fault that she's in this particular situation. I think that's the equitable argument that calls for a Palladino-type remand rather than just a flat remand and say whatever happens, happens.
But she really did get quite a break.
Yes.
Under all the circumstances. And I hate to tell you that, you know, we have sat here and talked to counsel and said, are you sure you want to appeal this? And the answer has been yes. And the case has gone back. And for whatever reasons, the outcome has been very distressing for the defendant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you be more comfortable speaking to your client and asking her what her wishes are, setting out all the possibilities, and letting us know what, and the government know what that decision is?
Well, I have discussed it with my client. I will discuss it again with the, you know, specific added information provided by the panel today. I do believe that a putting us in the position of either withdrawing the appeal or running that risk, I still believe that a Palladino remand would avoid all those problems without causing, you know, any others. It would give us what the court said in Palladino, the right to know.
Okay. Well, why don't we do this? For the second time today, we'll go back and discuss what has occurred here, the three of us, and send an order out or not send an order out. Or
mm-hmm. Okay.
But in the meantime, you will talk to your
I will definitely
about
talk
these
you might
developments.
Want, you might want to start talking
right.
to her.
At yes. least start.
Yeah.
At
yes.
least start, and yeah. depending on the outcome, get something in writing.
Yes. Because, well, I... Yes. Certainly don't want to give up the appeal if we can have a
yeah.
Palladino remand. On the other hand, if it's not going to be Palladino, but I understand that sometimes attorneys have to act in relative ignorance, and I seem to do that more often than some lawyers. So.
Now, I would not say,
that
at
either.
All.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I think you've done a great job for your client.
Thank you.
You've done a great job for the government. Heaven forbid I should not say nice things to everyone. Okay. All right. The case is going to be taken up.